Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Seeking Justice Show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin. For the next 90 minutes, I will be co-hosting the program along with Kim Colton. Kim, good evening. Kim?
Yes.
Good evening.
I am here. I'm sorry, I lost my mic for a minute.
Okay.
Good evening, and hello, Michaela, and hello, Cobra.
Hey, hi, Kim.
And we'll give out our phone number in a few minutes. We aren't going to take any calls right away, however, because we want to get some of the points in tonight's case out there. And tonight we're going to be discussing a Florida case out of Pinellas County, Florida, the case of Sean McMillan. And on September 2nd, 2001, at 2:26 a.m., Sean McMillan, age 26, was driven to the emergency room of Helen Ellis Hospital in Tarpon Springs by Rita Nordmark and her intoxicated brother-in-law, Dan Nordmark, who was an off-duty corrections officer. A bullet from Officer Nordmark's gun had ripped through Sean's brain. Officer Nordmark alleged the wound was self-inflicted. However, the facts indicate otherwise. And to discuss the case tonight, we have with us Sean's mother, Michaela Mahoney. Michaela, welcome to Seeking Justice.
Thank you. It's Michaela Mahoney.
Michaela. Oh, I'm sorry, Michaela. And also joining us, we have with us on the line now, out of Florida, private investigator and bounty hunter, William Cobra Staubs. Cobra, welcome.
Hey, Denny. Nice to be here, brother.
And joining us in about 15 or 20 minutes, we're going to have another private investigator who's been on the show frequently with us, Vito Colucci. He'll be joining us. He was doing the Nancy Grace program tonight and is going to be a little late. Hold on. We have a caller on now. Maybe he's getting in early. Hello? Caller? Caller from 209? Hello?
Oh, yeah, that's me, Gene Cervantes. I wanted to make comments, but you said we'd hold off on...
Okay, just stand by for a few minutes, Gene, until we get some ground covered here, and then we'll take your call, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, you can just listen in, and I'll get back to you as soon as we're ready.
Sure.
Okay. Well, let me... Denny, should I... Do you want me to start here? I've got... just want to... You did the intro, so we got kind of an idea.
Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Let me ask you, Michaela, Sergeant James McKenzie of the Tarpon Springs Police Department began his official police report with the words, at 2:39 hours on September 2nd, 2001, I was called at my residence in reference to responding to a shooting at Helen Ellis ER with special circumstances. Michaela, can you tell our audience what you believe special circumstances meant and what sort of code that was that Sergeant McKenzie was using?
Well, Sergeant McKenzie actually put special circumstances in quotes in his police report when he began it. He admitted months later to one of the prosecutors that special circumstances meant that Dan Nordmark was considered law enforcement. And so...
That's what the special circumstances meant.
Yes, and that took precedence over the investigation with the special circumstances, you know, because he was considered law enforcement. Because, you know, when this first happened, Dan Nordmark and his friend Bernie Dillman were at a bar called the British Pub that the Nordmarks owned. And then Dan Nordmark was extremely inebriated. He brought out his laser-activated gun, and he waved it around in the air in front of people. He kept jamming the slide in it to load the gun. Then he handed it to Bernie Dillman, his friend. And Bernie Dillman aimed the gun toward a gas station that was nearby in an occupied mobile home park and fired the gun. The witnesses that were there left. It was around closing time, and they had been standing around. They saw all of this happen. But but they were afraid somebody was going to get killed, and so they left. And it was just a few minutes later that my son was shot in the head. But none of this was in the police report at all. It was all knowingly concealed. They had been at another bar called the Palms earlier, where they had intimidated the karaoke woman. And she later said that she was scared. They were very aggressive and violent with her, Dillman and Nordmark, and that she was afraid they were going to hurt Sean because he came out to protect her. Then, as you saw in the police report, Sergeant McKenzie was called at home at 2:30 in the morning in reference to responding to a shooting at the hospital with special circumstances. So apparently that took precedence, that Tarpon Springs police ignored all their routine police procedures. They didn't take any fingerprints. They didn't do any GSR tests. They didn't administer any alcohol or drug tests on Nordmark, although he was so drunk he couldn't even stand up. He had to sit down on the curb. They didn't even document that he was extremely intoxicated until days later when I complained about it. They didn't question any credible witnesses. They questioned Dan Nordmark and Rita from 5 to 10 minutes. And Dan and Rita Nordmark had said they were at some other bar called the Shades Bar, and the police did not follow up on it. They didn't call anybody at the Shades Bar to confirm their story. They didn't contact anybody or any witnesses. They didn't follow up on a single lead. The police went into the emergency room and got peroxide from the supplies in there, and they told Rita Nordmark to start cleaning the evidence out of the car in the hospital parking lot. They didn't impound the car. They allowed Dan Nordmark to just walk away from the hospital. And at first, nobody could locate the gun in the car. There were three police officers before McKenzie got there looking for the gun. The hospital security guard was looking for it. The ER nurse, when they were pulling Sean out of the car, she felt around trying to find the gun. Nobody could find it until after Sergeant McKenzie got there, and then it was found in plain sight. There's pictures of it. The day after my son's funeral, Sergeant McKenzie threatened to arrest me if I talked to anybody about what had happened. Several occasions he threatened me. He was very aggressive toward my younger son, who was distraught, who went into the police station to get a copy of the police procedures. And he came screaming out into the front office, yelling at my son. Within 2 days of Sean's death, he closed the case, and he said his most conclusive piece of evidence that Dan Nordmark didn't shoot Sean was that there was not a trace of blood on Dan Nordmark's shirt, so that he couldn't have been close enough to shoot Sean. And later on, the sheriff at the time, the elected sheriff, Everett Rice, I talked to him, and he talked to his forensics department, because Sergeant McKenzie told the newspaper and told everybody that he had had Maximo Sanchez, one of his officers, take the shirt down to the sheriff's office and have it tested for blood. He said he did 4 tests, a sight test, phenothaline. There were several tests that he said he did. But Sheriff Rice told me that none of those tests were done, that they never do luminol test when there's no blood that's seen with the naked eye on the shirt. Anyway, so it looked like, they had fabricated all this material evidence. It was his most important piece of evidence. And then when they realized that I knew about this, all of a sudden the forensics person turned around and said, now she remembers. But Sheriff Rice had talked to the sheriff's lawyer before he called me. He talked to Maximo Sanchez from Tarpon Springs. He talked to Sandy Jacobs, the sheriff's forensics person who allegedly did the tests. He talked to her supervisor. They all agreed that none of those tests were done. So, and one of the things that McKenzie didn't know, and neither did Sandy Jacobs from forensics was that Sean was wedged into the car that night in the parking lot of the hospital, and the nurses couldn't get him out. And so before the police got there, Dan Nordmark reached down into the car, and there's a lot of testimony about how much Sean was bleeding, and his shirt was soaked in blood. You can see in the photographs, even 2 days later, it looked wet. But Nordmark reached down under Sean's arms with Sean's head up against his chest with blood pouring out and pulled Sean out of the car. And he had a hard time getting him out. He had to struggle and then pull him up onto a gurney. So there's no way that there would be not a trace of blood on Nordmark's shirt. And then two people later testified to the state attorney's office that Dan Nordmark had told both of them that the Tarpon Springs police took Nordmark's shirt that night because it was soaked in Sean's blood. And then when the state, when they told the state attorney that in a deposition, Bruce Bartlett, he changed the subject. He didn't ask him any questions about it. He just dropped it and went on to something else. So,
McKellen, can I interrupt for just a minute?
Sure, yes.
I have, well, there are several things you've said that caused me a little concern about how this was handled.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, and I want to run this by Cobra, it would be my opinion that that car, especially at this early stage of the investigation, would be considered a crime scene. I mean, there mm-hmm. had obviously been few, if any, witness interviews conducted by that point. And I can't believe the cops, the police, within 2 hours had pieced everything together as far as the movements that night, where everybody was, and so on and so forth. So for them to instruct the that the car be cleaned and the blood removed, washed away, that doesn't sit very well with me. Cobra, what are your thoughts on the police within 2 hours of the shooting wanting what I would consider a crime scene cleansed?
Well, brother man, I'm going to tell you, if one quarter of anything this lady said, me just sitting here listening to it, I'm appalled, number one. Number two, I heard everything except how in the world this little fella come up with this gun that this police officer had, and being that drunk, why did he have a gun? I didn't hear any questions like that. Maybe they're out there. But I'm surprised that the Florida Department of Law Enforcement hasn't taken a ride over in this case for the simple reason they closed it too fast. It's a bunch of unanswered questions, and it sounds like it was special circumstances. But every once in a while, we know that someone sometimes steps over the line. This might have been one of those times, and it's something this putrid. If, like I said, if a quarter of what she said is true, something this putrid, it doesn't set well with me. None of it does. I don't believe that this hasn't been taken up to a higher level. It just listening to everything that happened and the time frame that it happened in, and knowing a little bit about blood and how a person was in the car and headshot wounds. I sure hope they got him on some kind of negligent culpability for him using his gun or something. I hope the lady gets a fair turn out of all this, Denny, because it doesn't sound like so far justice has been served.
Yeah, that's the direction I'm certainly thinking also. And let me, Michaela,
I have to say in there that the FDLE did get involved when Mackenzie threatened me if I talked to anybody. I immediately started talking to people, and the FDLE did get involved, but they basically helped Mackenzie. And, you know, there were people that they talked to, like Sean's old girlfriend. They were still great friends. She said all he wanted to hear was negative stuff about Sean and our family. He didn't want to hear anything good. He passed on information that a month after the death, he confiscated the, he went and got the car, the FDLE went and got the car. The car had been totally scrubbed and clean with OxyClean. It was taken to a professional. It was scrubbed by very strong detergents and bleaches, and plus it was clean with peroxide at the hospital. So a month later, the FDLE goes and gets the car, and then they say that they found a hair on the car window. Initially, they said Sean was leaning forward. Sean was trying to get a ride home that night. They said Sean was leaning forward between the seats, smoking a cigarette, giving directions to his house. Well, later on, when the FDLE got involved, that agent, you know, he moved Sean over to the by the passenger window, saying that there was a hair on the window and it matched Sean's DNA. But first of all, the DNA, it only matched 1 out of 13 markers, and I had the DNA taken to an expert over at the University of South Florida. They matched 1 out of 13 markers. The only thing that hair showed was that it came from a male, and it was more likely an African-American male. Sean was blonde and blue-eyed. The FDLE agent said that there was a root on the hair that, you know, so that they could do their DNA with. But I looked at, I've got all the handwritten notes from the forensics lab at the FDLE. They said there was no root on the hair, so they couldn't do the type of DNA that would have been necessary for that. I had a gentleman named Terry LaVoy who worked at the FDLE for 10 years. He's a very well-known investigator. He looked at all the evidence. He said, you know, there's no way that, you know, they could say that Sean shot himself. There's no evidence that Sean ever touched the gun. And the FDLE agent threatened to sue me. My lawyer told me he tried to extort money, you know, if I don't, if I agree not to, if he agreed not to sue me, then, you know, I would have to pay him for that or something. But I just said, come on, let's go to court, and I never heard from him anymore after that. But the FDLE was no help at all.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Am I right? This is your son?
Yes.
I'm sorry for your loss.
And I've documented every single thing that I say. I have documents, police reports, FDLE reports, everything.
Here's one thing that I know. I did receive a small brief from Vinny, and I've already called a couple of my guys and asked a few questions. And the thing of it is I don't think you've been given a fair shake. I think there's more to it. I think that we're up against a blue line situation there to where somebody may be covering. I mean, the threats against you, that's why I ask if you're making sure that in my mind that you're the mother. I mean, it's one hell of a thing to go through such a loss. And
right.
Then another to be threatened with your own freedoms. And I'm sitting in freedom harm's way right now, so I understand that. And also, my father shot and killed himself in front of me, and I was 12. So I sympathize with all stuff. And I know this about speech. As I'm listening to you, I feel your passion. I feel what you're saying. And you're too fluent with it that either you're reading from a script, this is in your heart and in your mind and your soul, and you know it. And I'm believing that you're 100% right, and I think that the U.S. justice system would have to step in now.
I've contacted the U.S. justice system. I went to the FBI. The woman didn't want to hear it. I've done everything. I have done everything that I could think of. And by the way, the medical examiner, Charles Siebert, used to be in Pinellas County. He's the same one that was in the boot camp case up in the Panhandle. After he left Pinellas County, he went up there and sided with the police in that case.
You said you have these notes and these things. Have you had a private investigator go around and take sworn affidavits from the ones that are friendly? And of course, stay away from the ones that are not so daggum friendly. And, you know, I think the steps would be is if you've already went, the and I'm surprised at Florida Department of Law Enforcement, they usually are not swayed by the thin blue line mentality.
Well, it wasn't the whole FDLE. The gentleman who handled the investigation in Tampa, he was the head of it at the time, he has said all along it wasn't suicide. It was his agents that went in there and
Where is that gentleman? Because everybody has a boss. Everybody has a boss somewhere. And
well, he's not with it. He's retired now. So, you know, but he knows. I mean, they know that Sean never touched that gun. But now Mackenzie, it's my understanding, he's left the Tarpon Springs police department, and now he's working, it's my understanding, and I'm not positive about this, but he's working for the state attorney down there as a recurring witness and working for the sheriff's department. So,
Let me interrupt for just a second, if I could. We've got a couple of calls we need to get to that have been holding, then we'll come back. We'll see what the callers have to say. And anybody who would like to call in with a question or comment, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. We're going to go to Gene from area code 209. Gene, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Well, thank you. I've talked with McKelly for two or three times already. I'm a victim advocate with Citizens Against Homicide here in California. We're nationwide, and relative to the comment on the weapon, I'm a retired peace officer with Department of Corrections here in California, and we are taught, and we know the very first time we're handed a gun, never relinquish it to anybody.
Exactly, exactly.
Never relinquish it. And I don't know the name of the gentleman that was commenting on that earlier, but I agree with him 100%. Some disciplinary action needed to follow this particular incident. If for no other reason, saying he was accidentally shot with my gun, well, how did he get your gun? See, and that being said, I'd like to move on to the futile efforts of Mikayla for trying to get attention brought to this case. It's gotten to the point where law enforcement has neglected to do or fulfill their responsibility. The FBI is not, it's not unusual to hear her comment about the FBI. They want high notoriety cases, it appears to me, in all my contacts with the FBI, and I've had hundreds of cases that I've worked with over the last 5 years, and contact with the FBI, oh, we can't help you. You need to go back to the investigative agency. Well, the investigative agency has dropped the ball over and over and over again, is my comment, and they say, well, there's nothing we can do. Hire an attorney. So there comes a point in time where the TV media, i.e. people like Lester Holt, Nancy Grace, need to take notice of what's happening in the law enforcement arena. There's numerous cover-ups, and I was a member and have been proud to be a member of the law enforcement community. But I've never, ever condoned or subscribed to the blue line, green wall. Green wall is what California calls it because of the green uniforms that they wear. There's definitely a miscarriage of justice or a lack of caring for justice. There's very little follow-up when there's a peace officer involved, and special circumstances comment is very much code for peace officer involvement, whether it's a victim or suspect. It just appears that is the route that needs to be taken. Embarrass the local law enforcement agency, campaign against the presiding district attorney for failing to keep his oath to represent the people of his particular county there in Florida, and whatever else she could come up with, that's what needs to be done.
There's,
you know, I've had cases, and I have one in Connecticut where the suspect was allowed to go completely free because he had contacts with the state police. His girlfriend fell out of a car, out of his Escalade, very going about 30 miles an hour, they say, And the police, I'm sorry, the paramedics were saying, I've seen more bruising and road rash from somebody falling off. I mean, less road rash falling off of a bicycle,
mm-hmm.
Going 2 miles an hour. And there was blunt force trauma to the top of the skull and the back of the skull. And the coroner, the ME, says, no evidence of tumbling or rolling. Well, how did all that happen? They ruled it an accident. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of cover-ups nationwide. That,
mm-hmm.
And I certainly sympathize with your plight.
Thank you, Gene. And by the way, Nordmark and Dillman, after 8 months of me screaming and yelling, they were arrested for handling a gun while intoxicated. No one was allowed to mention Sean's name at the trial. But he ended up pleading guilty to that, lost his job in law enforcement, and went to jail for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Nordmark?
Something. Nordmark did. He went to jail for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And Dillman got not house arrest, but where he could go to jail for the weekend and then he could go out to work or something. But they both did get convicted of handling a gun while intoxicated. But that's all. No one was allowed to mention Sean. And Dillman just pled guilty to it instead of going through the trial.
Wow.
I got a question. I got a quick one for you. Was it a felony conviction or misdemeanor?
No, it was a misdemeanor. And he actually resigned. It was a 2-day trial on Nordmark, and he resigned in the middle of the trial that night between the 2 days so that he could keep his certification to carry a gun.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to ask you. Do you have or have you had an attorney on this case yet?
Yes, I've had 3 or 4 attorneys. The problem is, attorneys don't really know how to handle these cases.
Oh,
and I've had them. I've had them for. I sued Nordmark and won, so I had a good attorney on that one. Since then, I've had attorneys trying to get the death certificate changed to remove suicide. And there's no case law in Florida. The medical examiner actually said to me recently, John Thogmartin, nobody can make me change the death certificate. No lawyer, no judge, nobody can make me change it. So, that's pretty difficult.
He's just fooling himself. Listen, did you went after the guy that relinquished his gun? Is that the one you got?
Nordmark. Yeah.
Nordmark, the one that owned the gun.
Right, you got him.
He did go to jail for 3 weeks.
Okay, well, that's nothing. Did you get the department? Did you get the agency?
Oh, I've got a website. I put it all on there. I've talked, and made them angry, but no, I haven't been able to get them. And you can't keep paying attorneys. I'm an attorney. I can't handle this kind of thing, though. It's too emotional for me. I hire other attorneys. They don't know how to do it.
Have they sued the municipality yet?
No.
Okay. Here's what I would say. You're an attorney. I would have got them all in the first go-round, but, you may want to take a couple bites at them. But somebody's responsible for his training. All right? I always go after the standard. I usually don't go after cops.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it was this kind of guy right here, and everything's pointing to him being drunk and shooting your kid. I mean, I'm sorry how he got out
mm-hmm.
of it. He did it. I mean, by relinquishing his weapon, he should have been manslaughtered out. Not this.
Right. They protected him. They absolutely, dirty cops protected him. And that's not the first time he's been protected. They caught him in a car with drugs and open alcohol containers, and they drove him home. They didn't arrest him at that time. They drove him home. Then they said he didn't have any kind of record. The TV station, ABC 28, gave me a list of lewd and lascivious child abuse charges, breaking and entering, felony forceful breaking and entering, all kinds of things that have just been covered up. You can't find that anywhere in the records. I'm not sure where ABC 28 got it. But it was about Nordmark. So he's been protected for a long time.
What's scary is anybody, I mean, say this was my brother in law enforcement, and I had to kind of cover him, you know, a little bit. I mean, you know, there's certain things that you'll do if the guy was speeding or something. I mean, there's little things that brothers take care of brothers. Something this this bad, I'm wondering what he knew on the rest of the department. I'm wondering how
right.
the whole department is. See, I go after the standard operating procedure of the department. What
mm-hmm.
what is their, you know, how are they training their guy? I mean, did somebody, you know, did you go to a class for, you know, not to drink and have your gun out there and all that stuff? So it makes them culpable. I would be after them just as well as the rest of them, and then I would just keep on firing away. And in doing so, you're going to have somebody step in from the U.S. Justice Department and say, hey, let's see if we can do a trade-off here someplace. We'll get them back in here and find out what the real deal is. I don't care how well they've cleaned it up. There's too many things, especially the other guy discharging a gun towards a gas station in a crowded
mm-hmm.
Mobile home court, and these
right.
guys are still in some form of law enforcement someplace. I mean, first, that happened first. So this guy who relinquished his firearm to allow that to go down, and then it gets relinquished again for an alleged crap, bull crap. Somebody else pulled the gun out again, maybe him damn self, and did it. I don't want to too much talk about your crime scene there, but just one question that really interests me. Did the bullet enter and exit, or did it?
No, it entered and it wedged into the other side of his skull. It didn't exit.
And what caliber gun was it?
26 or something like that.
Oh,
it wasn't real big, and it was a laser-sighted gun.
Glock. Like that, yeah.
Yeah, and Nordmark allegedly told the bartender that night that he was also on LSD. Rita Nordmark testified that Dillman had a bag of Xanax, so on top of being drunk, it sounds like they were stoned out of their mind. And they both later told the FDLE they were blackouts, they were too drunk to remember anything that happened that night. So why are they credible? You know, why are they credible? Now, I did get suicide off of Sean's death certificate, but then the medical examiner put back in there, had an injury occurred, shot self. The same thing. You know, it's just horrifying what is going on with this group in Pinellas County.
Well, as a lawyer, you do have documentation on a lot of these things that
not at all.
Went back and said that we have blackouts and all this. I'm wondering
mm-hmm.
where this officer is working at now knows, hey, I could have a blackout. You might end up with my gun, or I might blow your damn head off. It, you know, it's all
mm-hmm.
from what my boys say.
When he was deposed, he took the Fifth Amendment. Dan Nordmark took the Fifth Amendment over 600 times. Dillman never showed up for any depositions.
Were you there during the taking of the 600?
I was there. I wasn't the lawyer. I was there.
What kind of questions was he taking the Fifth Amendment on?
Everything, even questions about Dillman. He took the Fifth Amendment on everything but, you know, simple things like his name. I have videotapes of it. Over 600 times he took the Fifth Amendment.
So he didn't answer any real questions?
Nothing. No.
No,
not at all.
So can I say something?
Pardon
this
me?
Is Melody. Can I say something?
Oh, hi, Melody.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm the unknown caller.
Oh,
Michaela has gone all the way to the governor also.
Yes.
Michaela and I are very good friends. This is Melody. My son was killed in Florida. FDLE in Florida is a joke. I'm sorry, but
mm-hmm.
it's a joke. And Michaela mm-hmm. and I are actually talking with a couple other people. I think we have a class action lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually,
fantastic.
I had emailed Gene recently we need to change the laws about the medical examiners because they think they're God and what they state is the last thing falling on the paper. I mean, you can't get it changed. It's ridiculous. They don't have to answer to anybody. Something I wanted to point out, Charles Siebert left Pinellas County and went to Panama City area, which is close to where my son died. They had the beating at the boot camp there. And that Siebert, the medical examiner, said he died of sickle cell.
Right.
That kid was proved to have been suffocated. There were no charges held against Siebert. My medical examiner that I have been dealing with on my son's case was put on Siebert's area after having been fired from that district previously, and she was hired for $50,000 a month on that district.
Well, the medical examiner's commission did file a 4-count administrative complaint against Siebert and asking for his immediate removal from office, saying he lied, you know, about work he performed in that autopsy with that young boy at the boot camp, in the boot camp case. And they said he was using, templates for his reports, and that's probably what he did with Sean's, because he had the wrong height, the wrong eye color, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, they're incompetent. It's ridiculous.
Right, they just automatically side with the police,
that's that.
And so it's like they're always right. They have the last say on a death certificate. There's no recourse in Florida at all. So if a medical examiner is dishonest, incompetent, biased, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. Nobody can overrule him. And that's what Doug Martin told me. Nobody can make him change it.
There
ought to be some sort of administrative procedure or appeals process.
Another one can overrule him. We got a very good one here in Broward County, very, very good. But he has integrity. But somebody said this was incompetence. This is not incompetence. Incompetence is when you mess up investigation and you do certain things, like some of the things that we saw in the O.J. Simpson, where he took the blood downtown and he took it back to the crime.
Right.
I mean, you know, that kind of stuff. There's a little bit of incompetence there. But this is with malice. I mean, this is somebody going all the way out to, you know, serve breakfast to the devil to protect their brother. I'm all for protecting brothers. I'm all for it. I mean, I represent the PBA, and if a cop gets in trouble, nobody has fallen on my watch as far as been convicted of any crimes or anything. Everything has been came back out to a zero balance. And, you know, I never would lie for them. I just tell me the truth. It's easier to tell the truth. This thing here, they can't tell the truth because this guy apparently is drunk. He lost his weapon twice. Second time, it ended up in a shooting where it should be some type of manslaughter or whatever. I mean, that's pretty serious. After the first shots rang out from some idiot shooting your gun, that should have told everybody you need to put the gun in the trunk and take the bullets out of it, you know.
Well, in this county, the state attorney protects law enforcement no matter how egregious their acts are. They are justified by the state attorney here.
Well,
right. So who do you go to? You go to the governor, and the governor is saying, oh, well, there's not enough information given.
Right. And the Tarpon Springs police have been investigated several times by the feds, by the FDLE. There have been even the Congress Bill Arrakis's office referred an investigation to the FDLE because they were getting complaints about perjury, planting evidence, all kinds of misconduct by the Tarpon Springs police. They've been investigated many times, but they all stick together.
Well, U.S. Justice Administration has some folks that get involved in that kind of stuff, and sometimes, you know, I've worked on myself, calling the governor, calling you know, Alex Sink, she's in charge of my license, just the stuff that I'm going through, which is so blatantly obvious. I mean, it's blatant obvious. There's no forensic tests that have to be performed. Just look at what it says on the page and let's move on. But we're hitting a dead wall. You know, in fact, one of them wrote back and said, please take us off your email. And I'm saying, hell, man, y'all work for us. You know, I just came to get you $250,000 in donations from my fellow bondsmen and everything else so you can run for governor. And the guy that I do this for tells me to take his name off of his email because he doesn't want to hear about my problem. That sucked. That happened this afternoon. Everybody tells me, you're too much for law enforcement. I said, listen, it's a rough job they have. You go out there in the middle of the night, like this case here that we're talking about, I could argue that one. The one with the little fella up there that got in the boot camp thing, I haven't done enough investigation on that one. That one to me is a toss out. This lady here with this guy already pulling his gun, somebody shooting it, and it's horrible. Can you put in words, Denny?
Let me just break in for just a second and say Vito Colucci, our other private investigator, has joined the chat room. He's in there. We don't have an open line right now. So he's lurking out there in the chat room and hearing what's going on. So when we get an open line, we'll bring Vito on board and we'll get his comments also on what he's heard about the case so far.
Denny, I'll hang up. It's Melody. I'll hang up. Michaela, you're doing awesome. You go, girl.
Melody, can you stay on for just a second?
Sure. I'm sorry. I was just trying to be helpful there. Yeah.
This is Gene Cervantes again from California. Citizen
yes,
Gene. I'd like to comment on incompetent MEs. I think it's a broader vocabulary that we need to apply to them. Some are incompetent, some are lazy, some cover up, some are unethical, some are out and out illegal.
I agree.
It runs the gamut. It's hard to pinpoint, but there's an article in the Kansas City that came out of Kansas City, Missouri, where a male adult, 49, was being prepared by the funeral home for embalmment. I guess that's how you pronounce it. And the paramedics who responded to picking up the body told the police they believed the death was natural causes because they found prescription containers for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. And the girlfriend said he had been sick and had heart problems. Well, the funeral home found two bullet holes in the back of his head, and the ME had already signed a death certificate saying it was natural causes because everybody told him that.
Mm.
All violent crimes should be treated as a homicide.
Exactly.
All violent deaths, I should say. Because once you rule a death a suicide or and put it on paper or remove the body or bodies if there's more than one victim, and other evidence, you can't replace that evidence or the bodies.
Right.
Without a complete investigation, and no matter how many hours it takes, you want a second or third opinion, if necessary, from a professional source that the death was, in fact, suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not being done on an ongoing basis. And what we need, I heard the gentleman say that MEs can be overruled. No, they can't. I beg to differ. If they're overruling, it's probably coming from the boss.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't overrule anybody. I've contacted at least a half a dozen states, including the U.S. Surgeon General's office, and they said absolutely no. The ME has the final word, and we need legislators to get involved, not locally, nationally. We need congressmen,
right.
We need congressmen and U.S. senators to get involved to introduce legislation that would change the lack. Well, actually, you can't change something that doesn't exist, but to at least initiate or institute an oversight agency for MEs nationwide.
Right.
What
makes it hard is people are stuck in their grief and they're not looking further ahead and going, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then you have to go through the legal system. You're so tired and exhausted emotionally. Who wants to fight that? That's where they get us, is they think we're going to quit because they wear us down.
We're victimized by losing our loved one, and then we're victimized again by the judicial system.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
and there needs to be a check and balance out there for the ME's office. If they're the last word and they can do whatever they want, say whatever they want, that you're right. That can't happen. There needs to be a check and balance. Jean, let me ask you, what was the name of the group that you're with out there in California?
Citizens Against Homicide.
Okay.
Citizen Against Homicide, this is Cobra. And the reason I thought that they could be overruled, because I probably watched too much TV in these cold case files where they went to 8 years later, they dug them up and said, bull crap, this happened. So something got changed, I believe.
Well, there have been some relentless detectives who, on their own, and I know this from personal experience, and I'm working on one in Fresno County right now where the ME said suicide by hanging. There's every indication that this young lady, 22-year-old, barely 100 pounds, hanged herself.
Mm-hmm.
she was sitting on a suitcase, for crying out loud, hanging from the dowel of a closet. Mm. And she was sitting down with just a loop, not even around her neck. It was just her head resting in the loop of the ribbon.
Mm.
And they ruled it suicide. But anyway, relentless detectives who do investigations on their own, and I know this for a fact, have brought evidence back to their supervisor, and they take it to the DA, and the DA says, we're investigating this as a homicide. And I know that happened in a couple of cases here in California that I was personally involved with.
In Florida, the state attorney, you know, they pretty much handpick the medical examiners. The governor appoints them, but the state attorney gets to pick them. And they use them in their cases to testify. So they're kind of in mm-hmm. there together, and they can arbitrary decisions.
Well, see, nationwide, a lot of the small counties can't afford a medical examiner, so they designate the local sheriff, particularly in the smaller counties, as the coroner. And he or she determines the body to be alive or dead. That's the extent of their medical evaluation. The body's dead. So if you want an autopsy, they have to go to neighboring counties and hire somebody. And they pretty much, if I get the drift, do what they do in Florida. They tell the coroner, the medical examiner that they borrowed from another county exactly what they want them to say in terms of cause of death.
Yeah, and the manner of death.
Exactly.
And that's a big difference. I mean, some people don't realize, you know, the medical examiner likes everybody to think that only he can decide the manner of death, too. Like, you know, what he said in Sean's case was the cause of death was a bullet to the head. The manner of death was suicide, because they only have five choices, homicide, suicide, natural, drowning, and there was one more. Accidental.
Yeah, undetermined. But
undetermined and accidental.
Like hell to have to use that term.
Right. But, you know, this medical examiner that we have in Pinellas, he was Siebert's best friend. He brought Siebert here. He does not want to change it. He said he was going to talk to Bernie McCabe. I knew I was, you know, up against the wall with that. And, you know, I had Terry Lavoie, that investigator that used to work for the FDLE and for the state of Michigan, he was going to talk to Throgmorton. Throgmorton said, I really want to talk to him. He's highly respected. Well, he did talk to him, and Terry Lavoie told him he believed that Dan Nordmark was so drunk and stoned that he was probably fooling around with the gun and the laser, and it went off and killed Sean. Well, later on, Throgmorton, I asked him about that after he had said he was eager to talk to him. And then he said, he was no help at all. And also, one of the sheriffs, one time, he saw my website in the paper, because I put it in the paper every year, on the day of Sean's death and the memorial on the obituary page, copslivesandcoverups.com. And so he saw it, and he said he was angry. His name's Michael Bailey. He's a homicide detective with the sheriff's office. But then he started reading about it, and a lot of the officers know about the Tarpon Springs police and, you know, what their reputation is. He actually went over and got the autopsy photos and looked at them, and he thought the gun was at least 6 inches away from Sean's head. And when I said that to Throgmorton, he said, well, that's not his expertise. You know, he's a homicide detective. So he just doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to change it. He's not going to change it. You know, and they've got McKenzie working down there, you know, in and out of the state attorney's office as a recurring witness. They're, you know, it's up against the wall. You know, what else can I do? The law needs to change. We have a medical examiner's commission here in the state of Florida. They need to be able to look at the evidence. They actually looked at Sean's case and said that it's not unreasonable to take suicide off in light of what the Tarpon Springs Police Department did or didn't do.
And that's why I would like to just beg, with capital B-E-G, your listeners to get involved, write the congressmen, write their state U.S. senators, and say, introduce legislation for oversight committees in the medical field.
Yes.
And people like Denny are helping because it's the networking. People hear and people start getting involved, and the more people are aware, the more changes we can do.
And I'm happy to
and
hear
we
got to
keep fighting. Yeah.
With that being said, I'm gonna make room, so I'm gonna hang up, and I appreciate you allowing me to speak.
Gene, thank you very much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you
yes,
for allowing
thank
me.
Yes, thank you so much, Gene.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye now.
I'm going to hang up, too. It's Mel. Bye, you guys. Michaela, you go, girl.
Thanks.
I'm
thanks,
still
Melody.
Listening, though. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Mel.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And I think we may have Mr. Vito on the line with us. Vito, are you there?
Yes, I am, Denny. How are you?
Well, welcome.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Vito, we have with us Kim, of course. We have Michaela. Sean's mom, and
yep.
We have Cobra, William Cobra Staubs.
How you doing, Cobra?
Hey, brother man, how you doing?
Good, good, good. Boy, I've been listening to this, Denny, for about 15, 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I have a couple comments whenever you want me to.
Why don't you go ahead right now and get us caught up here.
Okay. Again, I'm a former police officer. I worked many years. I support my brother officers. My son-in-law is a cop nowadays, the whole bit. But, you know, I have a reputation of telling it like it is sometimes. Maybe that's why I get booked on so many shows, because they don't get the standard, the cops are doing everything right approach. I do it most of the time, okay? The trouble with these cases, Denny, okay?
No.
Let me give you, for instance, police show up at a crime scene. They believe somebody hung themselves. Okay, situation like that. They do an investigation. Now, there's all levels. It could be a little investigation, a fair investigation, or a very thorough one. Somebody throws a name around of a friend that may have been there that caused the suicide or something like that. What happens nowadays, the difference nowadays from when I was a cop, is at some point those officers meet with the prosecutor, and many times, more than years ago, they would say to the prosecutor, you know, everything appears to be a suicide to me. We did an investigation. Now, again, I don't know how thorough it was. I've seen some that have been horrible. But the prosecutor looks at them, and I've been in these rooms. I've sat there, and I've heard this. The prosecutor goes, are you okay with that? You feel comfortable with that? Yeah, I think so. So now let's go forward a little bit to a situation where now the medical examiner has a body, okay? The medical examiner, and I know this too from being up at his office and from seeing this stuff, the medical examiner has in front of him what the police officers have said. This looks like a suicide to me. Now, the medical examiner is supposed to be such a thorough, top-notch person, okay? You wonder sometimes when they already have that planted in their head, how far are they going to go on this stuff? You know, how far are they going to look to maybe make a different decision? You know, when you guys were talking before, a thing came in my head, a parody of, for anybody that watches football nowadays, and I know maybe a lot of the guys do and some of the beautiful ladies that are on the blog do maybe, but sometimes if there's a controversial play, what does a coach do? He throws what's called the red flag out in the field to have it reviewed, okay? But, again, what to get that call overthrown, okay, you have to have an insurmountable amount of evidence to change that ruling on the field. And that's almost what you're dealing with here with a medical examiner. You know, we had a medical examiner about 2 years ago that was fired for taking money on a case from an individual family. They made it sound like it was just a little token gift for this or that. But he was fired and the whole bit. And, you know, these things do happen. Now, again, like I say all the time, 98% of the guys across the country, guys and women that are MEs, are probably very good, good, honest people. But more and more we're seeing this stuff goes on where you have a mother on a show that can't get any satisfaction for many years on a case because it's almost impossible to get these things reopened. They want to see, in other words, they want you to hand everything on their desk that is insurmountable evidence to change a ruling. And, you know, now that's not hard and fast what I'm saying. I don't want anybody taken away from the show thinking that I'm knocking all these people. But it's amazing nowadays. I mean, you know, Cobra sees these things. I see these things. And I'm a big backer of police officers. I mean, I did my, you know, I did my time. I was in the shootout. I got a combat cross. I mean, you know, so I've been there. I've been on the street, and I've done all that stuff. But it has changed over the years, the police officers. It's not the same, in some cases, not the same high caliber of people that it was years ago. A lot of times the investigations are not as thorough as they used to be years ago, where my lieutenant or my captain would say, get back in that room and do more on this, because I'm not happy with that. There's more going on here than what you say. And, you know, I hate to think 15, 20 years from now, the state of a lot of police departments across the country, if it continues that way. So, I mean, you know, the name of the show is Seeking Justice, and that's what everybody's on here trying to do. The police officers are good across the country. They put their life on the line. But when you have a mother who has a situation like this and you're not getting any kind of stuff going on to help you at all, it's a very frustrating thing when you're in the middle of it. You know, I told you about, I won't go into it, but a case that took us 4 years to get arrest on a case where they kept saying it was the kid did it on his own, this and that. Took us over 4 years to finally get people. And that was newspaper articles pounding on the prosecutor's desk. The old chief had to retire because we kept pounding away at him. A new chief came in and opened it up. But it shouldn't be that way. We were just very fortunate. We didn't, you know, I didn't do anything miraculous on that won that case. That was over four years of hard work on everybody's part, Dr. Bodden, myself, everybody. But it shouldn't have to work that way, Denny. So there's my soapbox stuff for tonight.
I appreciate it. But before we go on, I just want to, Cobra, I think, raised this a little earlier, and we were talking, I think it was Gene, too, from California, may have said that the media love high-profile cases that get a lot of readers, a lot of viewers, a lot of listeners, and so forth. And when you, but I'm convinced that the media is one possibility when you have, when you're not involved with a celebrity death or something like that, where it's just a normal person without the name recognition and the feeding frenzy the media goes into. If you can get the media involved, however, I think they can exert pressure and attention to kind of force some action, even if the agencies that should have done it to begin with don't really want to get involved, don't want to reopen a case, don't want to change something. I think the media attention and the pressure it generates can kind of force their hand. Does anybody agree with me, or am I whistling Dixie?
No, I think that helps a lot. And ABC 28 did two shows on Sean's case, and it was all over the news. And, you know, I know Vito missed the part about McKenzie, the investigating police sergeant from the Tarpon Springs police, did put in his police report that it was a case of special circumstances. He put it in quotes, meaning that the man with the gun, the drunk with the gun, was law enforcement. So he did, his investigation was biased. It was obvious that he did this. And I have had the press involved, and they were wonderful. But, you know, after a while, people, it's old news to people.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to back up there, Denny. You said, did anybody agree with you? I think you quote scriptures every once in a while because – There's a certain section in the Bible where a king is wondering, who is this woman that's going to drive him crazy? She keeps screaming at him, screaming. They keep coming. He says, listen, go give her what she wants, lest she drive me crazy. And brought the old adage is, the squeaky gear gets the oil. So you got to keep squeaking. You got to keep squeaking. Pretty soon, one day, so you know, that thing, we got to fix that. That thing's just damn crazy. We've got to fix that. Fix it now.
If they would just do the right thing, take off shot self. They know Sean never touched that gun.
Yep.
There's no evidence whatsoever that he ever touched the gun. If some one of them would step forward and have some integrity and just do the right thing, I would leave them alone. But I'll keep fighting, and I've been fighting, and, you know, I haven't left them alone. But they know it.
Michaela, let me jump in here with another couple of points. First of all, maybe you can clear something up for me. Maybe I missed it.
Okay.
But the police came to a fairly rapid decision, apparently, or conclusion that this was a suicide.
Yes, they closed the case within 2 days. And Monday, Sean died on Sunday. Monday was a holiday, Labor Day weekend.
Did they make that decision? From witness testimony?
Interview any witnesses. No, they said it's special circumstances. They did no fingerprints, no GSR. They cleaned the evidence out of the car with peroxide at the hospital. They got rid of all the evidence, destroyed it, let Nordmark walk away, never did any alcohol or drug tests on him, nothing. I mean, if you drove up to a hospital in a car and you were drunk out of your mind and a young man's bleeding to death in the back seat of your car with a bullet from your gun, don't you think you'd be questioned and arrested and, you know, you'd have fingerprints taken, GSR taken, you know, everything. They would impound your car. They did nothing. They let him walk away while my son was dying, and then they threatened to arrest me if I tell anybody what they do. That was Sergeant James Allen McKenzie from the Tarpon Springs Police Department.
As I said earlier, and Vito may not have been listening at that point, but Vito, within 2 hours after Sean was taken to the emergency room at the hospital, the police ordered Nordmark's sister-in-law to start cleaning the blood out of the car. My contention is that was a crime scene at that point.
The police went into the hospital and got the peroxide and told her and a nurse to start cleaning it out.
I mean, that's just unbelievable to me.
That's 2 hours, Denny. Come on. I mean,
they knew what they were doing.
You know, you say that story to somebody like the judges say in court a lot of times, what a reasonable person would determine.
Yeah.
And so a reasonable person would determine that this ain't right. You know, there's something wrong here. You know, it happens. These things happen. This was a CO. I told you guys the case where the fire chief's son was in an accident, and before the police even got there, the fireman got there and was taking the liquor bottles and beer bottles out of the kid's car. I mean, these things happen in life. It happens. They're totally wrong, and it doesn't happen as much. It's happening more than years ago. So it's increasing, the percentage-wise, of these things happening. That's why these shows, it's never-ending with these type of cases. And again, like you guys said, and Cobra said, the whole bit, you got to make noise. I mean, we've said this so many times, because they want you to go away. It's kind of like when I handle a divorce case, and one side, let's say the husband has a lot more money than the wife, and he's able to get continuance after continuance, beat her down, just waiting for her to give up, to say, oh, fine, give me whatever money I'm going to get. See? And that's almost the same thing on this. Oh, here comes that lady again. They look out of the window of the squad room. Here she comes. She's a pain in the neck. Hey, she's online too. You want to take it? No, tell her I'm off today or something. And again, it's not all bad, but what gets me nervous and worried is that the percentages of these type of cases are going up.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a scary thing.
That's a scary thing, because it could be anybody's family, Denny. Anybody's family. When, if you remember that thing, Amadou Diallo, it was a big, big case in New York City. It was a black guy that was coming out of a tenement building. Mm-hmm. He had his wallet in his hand. The police thought it was a gun. They shot numerous times. It went to court. Even the lawyers for the cops said, "Oh, this was a gross error in judgment by my clients." You know. Nothing happened to them. Now, I'm not saying something had to happen to them, but you don't allow somebody, if this was a gross error in judgment, hey, man, you got to go back to being an electrician or a carpenter or something.
Right.
You know, you know why, Denny? Because if I'm a cop, I don't want to ride with these guys, because say we have an incident and we need to use our guns, they're going to be hesitant on a legitimate thing, and they're going to put my life in danger. So when those things happen, and I always say that, and I said to the cops during those TV times of Amadou Diallo, I said, what would you do if that was your brother coming out of that place and he had a black wallet in his hand, putting it in his pocket, and the cops all shot him? Would you be that quick to say it was an accident, forget about it? No. And every guy was, oh, well, I don't know. I said, well, you can't answer for your own brother, but you're quick to say, you know, it was an accident. That could happen to any cop. But when you say that it was a gross error in judgment, then you better find another line of work, because you're gonna hurt everybody around you, you know?
Right.
And let me, we got another call waiting. Were you going to say something, Cobra?
Yeah, it's kind of scary. We got a guy that's got a lethal tool, if you will, in his right hand, and we said it was a some kind of grossness went on. I mean, how long before it pops off again?
Let me take this other call, and after the call, what I'd like to do is ask Michaela about Sean's mood the day before this happened. So we'll get back to that in just a second. Let me get the caller first. Caller from area code 352, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Celeste, and I'm calling in. I've been Michaela's friend since we were 4 years old. And I have to say that I have to defend the police chief of Tarpon Springs for doing one thing correct. And that was the day after when he received the police report, he emailed that police officer and informed him he needed to change the police report because he did not see this mother going away anytime soon. And it goes back to the caller ahead of you of me that just stated the biblical story about the mother not going away anytime
mm-hmm.
soon. And
good
you know, I'm very close to this case from day one.
Mm-hmm.
So this mother's not going
away. And she knew Sean,
away.
And she knew Sean was happy and not suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This yeah. mother's not going away anytime soon.
How was Sean? I saw a little writing about his demeanor. He was wanting to be a law enforcement officer himself?
No, he had a year of law school. He graduated from Florida State. He had a year of law school. He was very involved in student government. He was about to start a new job at American Express, and he was working for three attorneys at the time. They just trashed Sean, the FDLE and Nordmark and his friends, and made him look like he deserved to die, like he was garbage.
What kind of support did the attorneys that he worked for, did they come?
There was a letter from, there were 50 letters that were written to the state attorney by family, friends, ATO fraternity brothers, all saying that they knew Sean, you know, and how he, no way would he have killed himself. They were all ignored, absolutely ignored by the state attorney's office. And one of the letters came from one of the lawyers that he was working for, saying that he had spent time with Sean that day, in the office. It was a Saturday, because Sean was shot at 2 a.m. Sunday morning and died Sunday afternoon. But that Saturday, I went into the office. Sean was with me, worked with me for a while, and then he went and worked with the other attorney. And he and his wife sat there and talked to Sean. Sean was excited, telling him all about his American Express job that he was going to start next Wednesday, which was the day of his funeral, happy as he could be. But they trashed Sean and said that, he was depressed and he was suicidal. And these were people who worked for the Nordmarks in the British pub, the bar that they owned. And that's another thing. When they said that, they were, you know, the police report said they were at the Shades Bar. The FDLE said, oh, well, you know, in the excitement, they just forgot the name of the bar. They owned the bar. So they owned the bar. But, you know, they basically trashed Sean. And just like I said with the girlfriend that wrote, you know, they actually called her, the FDLE agent, and she said every time she tried to tell them something, you know, good about our family and how close we were, he didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to hear anything positive about Sean or our family. He was looking for negative stuff. The FDLE agent actually went to the library. Sean read constantly. He had his trunk of his car was always full of books. He always had a book in his hand. He was brilliant. And so they actually went to the library and put in their report that Sean had books out that were, they wanted to document whether he actually had a library card. Instead of investigating the drunken law enforcement officer with the gun, they were investigating and trashing the victim. So they put in their report that his book was overdue at the library. Well, he was dead, you know. I mean, it was disgusting how it was handled.
It sounded like they put a lot more investigative effort into trying to find the negative things on Sean than they did trying to find what truly happened.
Absolutely.
Or document what truly happened. That's really a shame.
They did. And they didn't investigate the Nordmark and Dillman at all. You know, they were just free to go. They're still out there. People tell me they're drunk and stoned all the time. I haven't seen them, so I don't know that firsthand, but that's what I hear. And I've even heard Nordmark tell a lawyer told me that he was telling people a couple years ago he didn't care how long it took, he was going to get me too. So
let me ask you this, Michaela. You've seen or have most of the reports and statements and so forth.
Yes.
Who actually told the police that Sean shot himself? Was it the Nordmarks and Dillman?
No, Dillman never spoke. He was passed out in the car at the hospital. Nobody interviewed him. The FDLE interviewed him later because none of that was in the police report. I started going to the bars and asking questions and finding out about all of this. And, you know, there was some man that had seen them there. He told me, you know, some of the stuff that went on. And I started questioning people. And then the state attorney's office and the FDLE, they were nasty about it. I had already talked to these people. But they weren't going to do any investigation past, you know, the lie in the police report. Nothing about the gun, nothing about Dillman firing it, nothing about Nordmark bringing the gun out, nothing about them being at the British pub. You know, it was all completely concealed and covered up until I got out there and started talking to people and bringing it out and screaming
and
about
Michaela,
it.
And, Michaela, there was something about the karaoke lady. What was that?
Right. Well, the karaoke lady was at the Palms. None of this was in the report either. Later on, she was deposed by the state attorney, and they brushed her off. But she said that she was loading up her equipment. And Nordmark and Dillman, one of them, wanted to sing another song. And she said, no, I've got to go home. She went out to her car. She said they surrounded her, and they were extremely aggressive with her. And she said Sean came out and, you know, tried to defuse the situation. She said Sean was real sweet and laid back. They were aggressive and mean, and she was afraid. And she said the way they – and when Sean was taking up for her, she said the way they looked at Sean – you know, she feared for his life. She said there's no way he committed suicide. And when the state attorney was told that, he said something like, oh, well, it's a big leap from a mean look to killing somebody. And she goes, yeah, but somebody's dead. Well, then later when she was interviewed by the TV station and told them all this, and she and the other bartender who were testifying said that they got death threats on the telephone. People were calling them up, telling them they were going to kill them. So they called the police. The state attorney, Bruce Bartlett, said that it was either Bruce Bartlett or his investigator, Porter, said that, oh, we can't trace the call because they marked it unknown caller. And I called Verizon, and they said, of course, you know, with a subpoena, of course, they could have gotten the records. They didn't even want to get the records to see who was threatening this karaoke lady and the bartender.
They didn't care, Burnett, and I'll tell you, just as I'm sitting here, I'm telling you that that's exactly what caused him to be shot, because I bet you, it was, like you said, he went to the other bar about 15 minutes later, 20
right.
minutes.
And right.
That's in a nutshell right there, and that fella up there knows it, and he's murdered somebody, and he knows
that's
it.
Right, and they know Sean never touched that gun, and those witnesses that were at the bar, the ones that left after the gun was fired, they all said that Sean was trying to stay away from that, you know, that he had no way did he touch the gun. And the FDLE even put in his report, the agent, that that Rita had said, oh, Sean had the gun, he was waving it around, recklessly playing with the laser. Well, when the state attorney got her in there, you know, they wanted to build on that, and they asked her about it. And she said, I didn't say Sean, I said Dan Nordmark. He was waving the gun around, with playing with the laser. But see, they just brush it all off. I mean, I have documented everything. They know that Sean never touched that gun. And they just can't bring themselves to have some integrity and to do the right thing.
All you're trying to do is get his name straight out, get this suicide off.
I got suicide off, but I want shot self off, because the medical examiner puts in there, you know, how did injury occur? It says undetermined for manner of death. But then I trusted him. I actually signed a stipulation that I wouldn't bother him anymore. I wouldn't go after him for on any issues. I asked my lawyer, please get the copy of the amended death certificate before the judge signs the order on the stipulation. But he's like, don't worry about it. Well, I got it because I didn't trust them. And sure enough, he had written back in there, you know, how did injury occur? Shot self. It's the same thing. It's suicide. Yeah. Everybody knows it. And now they're very smug. You know, the medical examiner's going, well, I did what I agreed to. Nobody can make me change it.
Well,
and so the law needs to change.
Two unknowns on there, and that would have made you happy. So, first of all, they're just little actors up there. They're not even trying to cooperate. I mean,
no.
I mean, it's tragic that it happened, and I feel so bad for you. And it's tragic that they screwed it up. But if all that tragedy, and I know how you get, because you get that way sometimes where you say, you know what, if I could just have a little sweetness, I'd be all right. So if you just change that, I'll be okay. And then for them to dilly-dally around with it and mess with you.
Yeah. Now, they're angry at me because I've been a, you know, a thorn in their side.
Totally
so they're, you know, they have no intentions of doing it. But I'm not going to give up. If I had to go start going to all the legislators to try to get the law changed, I'll do that next.
Yeah, they're acting very
That mother's well. Not going away anytime soon.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, she's got her job. She's dealing with a bunch of immature folks, and she's trying to get them under control there.
Right, and I'm doing this for my son and for my other son. You know, he has suffered so much through this, too. I mean, he's the worst thing was being in there watching Sean dying with my younger son, Daniel, with his head pressed on Sean's chest as his heart, you know, after they disconnected the respirator, his heart kept beating for 15 minutes because he was strong and healthy, and Daniel had his head on his chest listening to his heart beat slower and slower and slower until it stopped. And, you know, I'm doing it for them, and I'm not going to give up until somebody does the right thing.
Well, and I understand that you're also doing it for other people that aren't attorneys that can't fight for their children that had an injustice served upon them. So,
that's right.
You know, in all the years of watching you do your work, it's not just for your family, but for those families that can't afford an attorney to do all the background work that you did for hours and hours and hours and days.
Well, that's true.
And then
paid
an attorney.
And I thought about that with Mackenzie and how many times the Tarpon Springs police probably laughed at women that went in there that wanted to know what happened to their sons or daughters. And I started talking to many of those people and found out how even grandparents, mostly African-Americans, they walk out of their house and they were pushed to the ground and searched and arrested and abused by the Tarpon Springs police. It's just amazing what they've gotten away with. And if some of the things that have happened in our African-American neighborhoods happened in a white neighborhood, they'd all be fired. But they've gotten away with it. And that's why they were investigated again by the feds and the FDLE a couple years ago. But I even asked the chief of police over there to do an internal investigation on Mackenzie, and he just wrote me a nasty letter. He just refused to do it. So they stick together. It's really disgraceful. Why aren't they required to have integrity? They treat citizens as if the citizens are the enemy, instead of treating them with respect and integrity.
Sounds like I'll need a new sheriff over there. Somebody vote a new sheriff in. And Denny, I'm gonna agree with Simon on this one. He struck Putnam County off his Christmas list. I'm gonna strike the Tarpon Springs off of mine. I don't think I ever been there, but I sure don't want to go there.
No.
Hey, Denny.
Yes, Vito.
No, you know what's a shame? You know, I think about a lot of cases, and I think maybe Kim said it before about people that don't have the money. That's the unfortunate part. That case I told you about before, the guy hired me. He hired Dr. Michael Bott, and he hired a team of attorneys. He did this, he did that. But he had the money to do that. And it shouldn't be that way, that you have to, a person has to go out and spend thousands of dollars to get an investigation, what should be done free for you, a thorough investigation. And, you know, it makes you sad when you think about it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it seems to me that all these agencies, the local police, the initial agency of jurisdiction, in this case Tarpon Springs, and then the FDLE and the state attorney, it seems like in a lot of cases, not just in this case, but in with the other cases we've covered, they expect and usually it's the parent or a parent, to bring in compelling, overwhelming evidence that there was something else happening than the way it was determined through their investigation or their reporting. And I'm thinking, isn't it their job to do that? I mean, you know, they want the citizen to do the investigative work and come up with the smoking gun, if you will.
And people don't know how to do that, Denny.
That's
right. Somebody's taken out of their regular life of being a father, a mother, raising kids. The fella, the father of the kid, the case I've been talking about with you, the father now is such an authority on these things that he would stay up late at night, he would study things, he would read things, he would, read things about these other individuals. He would make a whole binders of materials that he would give to me. And I'd say to him, John, what did you do? Well, hey, I'm up to 2 in the morning. I'm putting this all together. He became, now, the man's not supposed to become an authority on this because of his son's death. He's supposed to go on with his life, running a big landscaping company, move on with his life, be a family man, not have to do what he had to do. Okay,
right.
To get justice.
That's true. I mean, just getting ready for this program is traumatic. You know, I've had to pour over reports, autopsy photos, I mean, things that are just, and it's not me, just me. It's all the parents who are going through this, like the man that you're talking about, and Melody, and, thousands of other ones around the country. And it's traumatic for all of us, and you never get over it, especially when, you never know the truth of what really happened, and they hide it from you, and...
Well, thank God for shows like these. I've said it before. Thank God for all the good ones on Blog Talk Radio now. Unfortunately, with TV now, it used to be a time a couple years ago where, almost every cable news station would carry stories like this. Now you only have very few that do it. Everything now is Obama and what's going on in government and the health care. And they've gotten away from all of these. Nancy Grace, who I just came from the studio an hour or two ago, she still does it, of course. But, thank God now we have Block Talk Radio that's able to be a platform for people like you to come on and keep that alive because, your son is saying that away, Mom, thank you. He can't speak for himself. You have to speak.
Yes, that's right.
I tell you what's really, 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 really sad out there. For 30-some years, I've been on the side of law enforcement. I'm usually the guy that goes gets them after they arrest them. They got on bond. I brought back, the numbers are over 8,000. And I'm just doing my job, go find the guy, bring him back, and they all got stories. And, half the time when you're arresting folks, you don't listen to stories. Man, I just got to get him to the jailhouse, and they're telling me about the injustices and how this time when he goes in, he's not going to be able to get out. He can't afford it. He can't afford his legal fees. And I'll tell you, I thought that the scales of justice was blind, but it sounds like up there in Tuna Fish County, they run around with a blindfold on. And, I heard them peeking. Peeking's all right once in a while, but they run around with no blindfold on at all. They just doing what they want to do. Dang, we could, man.
I've talked to a lot of parents. Melody, who called in earlier, she's got another very frustrating situation happened to her son. But these cases, they seem so blatant. It's almost like it's something out of a fictional TV show or something that this happens. It's hard to believe it happens in real life, that there can be these what seems to me to be overwhelming circumstances that dictate the investigation, whatever there was of it, was either mishandled or corrupt or whatever term you want to put on it, and that it can just go. I mean, it's like there's nowhere else to turn, and it's just mind-boggling to me that happens. It's just taint right, as they say.
That's right. My girlfriend checked me. It wasn't tuna fish. It was tarpon springs. Hell,
right.
It was one in fishy situations. I'll tell you that now.
So,
I just wanted to add real quick, Melody, when you brought up Melody there, Denny, it reminded me of what she had said about the class action suit. And Cobra and Vito, I kind of wanted to get your input on that. What do you think of something like that?
Love them. I love class actions. Here's the thing. I was embroiled in some stuff going on in Putnam County. Still, my freedom's at stake over something so idiotically stupid. It'd be like a police officer being arrested for arresting somebody in the bail bond business is similar to the same thing. But I found out that, I was battling these jokers by myself, And then all of a sudden I decided to form a class action, and I've got Pastor Grun on board, who just came out on the face of National Enquirer, human sacrifice and all that crap, and a couple other ones, and we joined in there. And I'll tell you what, on the civil side of things, I think that's right now you've already pretty much shot everything you had except for going after the department for their standard operating procedure on this case. So I think the next thing out would be a class action suit where you get a half a dozen folks and you say, hey, you know what, enough's enough. And that picks up the media real quick. And I think that if you put a plan like that together and made some type of announcement on it, I think you'd find the case get back in the spotlight for a minute. I mean, I was pretty successful getting this case back in the spotlight, but it ended up blowing up. Okay, I got a little bit too much spot on it, and they put the light on my hind end. But there's a way of doing it. I mean, I'll be better educated next time around. Trust me on this one. But until you keep those squeaky gears screaming, like I said, they run around without no blindfolds on, man. And it's not, you know, I understand there's another law enforcement officer there. The other investigators done law enforcement. Listen, there's one thing to cover for your buddy if he's drunk and he was, you know, messing with some girl down at the bar, and you get on home and you try to keep that okay and everything's all right. Or he had a little indiscretion going on. But somebody get the head blown off with your gun and has already been shot fired. I mean, if I was to pull my gun out and start shooting up in the air anywhere, man, shots fired, they'd have them blocks around it. I can just go knock on a door and get the blocks around it. So I can't fathom this. I can't get my mind around it, Denny.
Me too, Koba. Vito, what was your thoughts on Kim's question about the class action lawsuit potential?
I think it's a very good idea. The thing you have to be careful with is you have to make sure who your attorney is.
Oh, yeah.
Probably somebody from, more than likely out of town that's not afraid. See, you know, it's the first question, obviously, is are you afraid to take on the city? Are you afraid to take on the police department? Are you afraid to do that? And it has to be somebody that's willing to say, number one, I believe in you. I believe your story. Okay, I believe that is the way this happened. And number two, yeah, I'm from the town three towns over, and I have no friends there or nothing else. I would do a good job for you, and the whole bit. That's the whole problem. You need to get somebody that's willing to take on the authorities, because it's a big role. It's a very big role. It's not an easy thing. You know, you're asking somebody to go against the police department, and the city's going to be sued, and this one's going to be sued, and that one, and a whole bit. So
it's hard to find a lawyer to take a case like that.
I would ask for a transfer, too. If you could transfer it to the same areas in the same state, but take it a couple counties away, because you're not going to get a fair trial over there. Now you're going to get some home cooking because you brought old outside boy in there. So there's a couple of dangers. Trust me, I've stumbled down this road and ain't nobody killed nobody. You know, this is a case where somebody killed somebody. So I can only imagine what roadblocks you run into and different things get put up in front of you. But if you can pull that off and get that feller that you can ask him, listen, will you risk everything? Do you believe in me that much? And if he says yeah, I'll go jail with you too. By God, let's go. All right, that's your boy.
Hard to find them.
I was just going to say, and Michaela, I don't think you're going to have problems finding half a dozen people in Pinellas County. Just a thought
there. I can find
there.
The people. I can find. I've met a lot of people who have gone through things like this, but finding an attorney who's willing to take on a case
story.
Like that, and then you're dealing with statute of limitations and all that kind of stuff too. So.
Well, murder.
Well,
honey.
Vito, I didn't mean to interrupt you, so go ahead. We have about a minute left.
No problem. I was just kind of working off of what Cobra said before. I was talking to a good friend of mine, a lieutenant on a police department, and what he said, we were talking about it one day. He says, hey, you know, every so often, you know, I see one of the cops that works for me. He's in the bar. He has a little too much to drink. We bring him home. We may see another cop with a girl someplace in a restaurant. We know that's not his wife. Hey, we're not the marriage police. You know, we go about. But he said, if I see a cop in my department doing something wrong against the law, I'm going to put the cuffs on him.
There you
see?
Go.
And that's kind of like That's how it's supposed to be.
That's
you know, you have a brotherhood where you say, hey, man, Cobra, you've been drinking. What are you doing? Come on, let me get in the car over here. Oh, I'm all right. Now, come on, get in the car. Let me bring you home. That's how it works that way. But if you see Cobra in the back door of a jewelry store trying to break in, like this
lieutenant
said.
Wasn't me, man.
Said,
I told you that wasn't me, damn it. That was
then that's when you, that, like this lieutenant says, hey, man, Vito, I'll be the first one to put the cuffs on him. I don't care if I know the guy 20 years. And that's how it's supposed to be out there.
Yeah, well,
absolutely.
I just, Denny, we've got about 20 seconds left. You want to say goodnight?
Yes. So listen, Michaela, Celeste, Vito, and Cobra, thanks a million. It's been great, and I'll be fired up. I won't sleep for a while tonight because I'm fuming. But
you
thanks
right.
so much for being with us.
Well,
thank you.
And
Michaela.
If anybody wants to read more about Sean, they can go to my website, copslyesandcoverups.com.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michaela. God bless
you. You too.
Thank you, Cobra.
Bless you. God bless you.
God bless you all.
Cobra, good
okay,
being out
bye.
With you.
Hey, thanks, Denny.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
All right.